A bit of pertinent research told me how to get in. And I'd rather sell the entrance information and save my hide. It won't be easy to get past the booby traps in there. Hide? Snakeskin, more like. Though he had a point. I didn't think he'd last long, trying to get through a temple on his own. So, spill it, I said, anxious to get going. He leaned in, and the overpowering scent of cologne and sweat hit me. I grimaced, held my breath, then leaned forward to hear his whispers. As soon as Clarence walked away, the communications charms around my neck vibrated. I jumped, then groaned. Only one person had access to this charm. I shoved the small package Clarence had given me into my shorts pocket and pressed my fingertips to the comms charm, igniting its magic. "Hello, Mr. Oribus." I swallowed my bile at having to be polite.
"Girls," he grumbled.
Nix made a gagging face. We hated when he called us girls.
"Change of plans. You need to go to the temple tonight."
"What? But it's dark. We're going tomorrow." He never changed the plans on us. This was weird.
"I need the daggers sooner. Go tonight."
My mind raced. "The jungle is more dangerous in the dark. We'll do it if you pay us more." "Twice the usual," Del said. A tinny laugh echoed from the charm.
"Pay you more? You're lucky I pay you at all."
I gritted my teeth and said, "But we've been working for you for 4 years without a raise."
"And you'll be working for me for 4 more years. And 4 after that. And 4 after that.
Annoyance lurked in his tone. So did his low opinion of us. Del's and Nix's brows crinkled in distress. We'd always suspected that OMB wasn't planning to let us buy our freedom, but he dangled that carrot in front of us. What he just said made that seem like a big fat lie, though. One we could add to the many others he'd told us. An urge to rebel, to stand up to the bully who controlled our lives, seethed in my chest.
"No," I said. "You treat us like crap, and I'm sick of it. Pay us fairly."
"I treat you like crap, as you so eloquently put it, because that is exactly what you are. Fire souls."
He spit the last word, imbuing it with so much venom I thought it might poison me. I flinched, frantically glancing around to see if anyone in the bar had heard what he'd called us. Fortunately, they were all distracted. That didn't stop my heart from thundering in my ears, as rage replaced the fear. I opened my mouth to shout at him, but snapped it shut. I was too afraid of pissing him off.
"Get it by dawn," he barked, "or I'm turning one of you into the Order of the Magicka. Prison will be the least of your worries. They might just execute you."
I gasped. "You wouldn't." Our government hunted and imprisoned, or destroyed, fire souls.
"Oh, I would, and I'd enjoy it. The three of you have been more trouble than you're worth. You're getting cocky, thinking you have a say in things like this. Get the daggers by dawn, or one of you ends up in the hands of the Order."
My skin chilled, and the floor felt like it had dropped out from under me. He was serious.
"Fine."
I bit off the end of the word, barely keeping my voice from shaking.
"We'll do it tonight.
Del will transport them to you as soon as we have them."
"Excellent."
Satisfaction rang in his tone, and my skin crawled.
"Don't disappoint me, or you know what will happen."
The magic in the charm died. He'd broken the connection. I collapsed back against the chair. In times like these, I wished I had it in me to kill. Sure, I offed demons when they came at me on our jobs. But that was easy, because they didn't actually die. Killing their earthly bodies just sent them back to their hell. But I couldn't kill another supernatural. Not even OMB. It might get us out of this lifetime of servitude, but I didn't have it in me. And what if I failed?
I was too afraid of his rage, and the consequences, if I didn't succeed.
Shit, shit, shit!
Nix's green eyes were stark in her pale face.
He means it.
Yeah. Thel's voice shook. We need to get those daggers.
Now,
I said.
I wish I could just conjure a forgery, Nix said. I really don't want to go out into the jungle tonight. Getting past the Dvadapala in the dark will suck.
Nix was a conjurer, able to create almost anything using just her magic. Massive or complex things, like airplanes or guns, were outside of her ability, but a couple of daggers wouldn't be hard. Trouble was, they were a magical artifact, enchanted with the ability to return to whoever had thrown them. Like boomerangs. Though Nix could conjure the daggers, we couldn't enchant them.
We need to go. We only have 6 hours until dawn.
I grabbed my short swords from the table and stood, shoving them into the holsters strapped to my back. A hush descended over the crowded bar. I stiffened, but the sound of the staticky TV in the corner made me relax. They weren't interested in me, just the news, which was probably being routed through a dozen techno-witches to get this far into the jungle. The grave voice of the female reporter echoed through the quiet bar. The Fire Soul was apprehended outside of his apartment in Magic Spend, Oregon. He is currently in the custody of the Order of the Magicka, and his trial is scheduled for tomorrow morning. My sources report that execution is possible. I stifled a crazed laugh.
Perfect timing.
Just what we needed to hear after OMB's threat. A reminder of what would happen if he turned us into the Order of the Magicka. The hush that had descended over the previously rowdy crowd, the kind of hush you get at the scene of a big accident, indicated what an interesting freaking topic this was. Fire souls were the boogeymen. I was the boogeyman, even though I didn't use my powers. But as long as no one found out, we were safe. My gaze darted to Del and Nix. They nodded toward the door. It was definitely time to go. As the newscaster turned to report toward something more boring, and the crowd got rowdy again, we threaded our way between the tiny tables and chairs. I shoved the heavy wooden door open, and sucked in a breath of sticky jungle air, relieved to be out of the bar. Night creatures screeched, and moonlight filtered through the trees above. The jungle would be a nice place, if it weren't full of things that wanted to kill us.
We're never escaping him, are we?
Nix said softly.
We will.
Somehow. Someday. Let's just deal with this for now. We found our motorcycles, which were parked in the lot with a dozen other identical ones. They were hulking beasts, with massive, all-terrain tires, meant for the jungle floor. We'd done a lot of work in Southeast Asia this year, and these were our favorite forms of transportation in this part of the world. Del could transport us, but it was better if she saved her power. It wasn't infinite, though it did regenerate. But we'd learned a long time ago to save Del's power for our escape. Nothing worse than being trapped in a temple with pissed-off guardians and a few tripped booby traps. We'd scouted out the location of the temple earlier that day, so we knew where to go. I swung my leg over Secretariat. I liked to name my vehicles, and kicked the clutch. The engine roared to life. Nix and Del followed, and we peeled out of the lot, leaving the dingy yellow light of the bar behind. Our headlights illuminated the dirt road as we sped through the night. Huge fig trees dotted the path on either side, their twisted trunks and roots forming an eerie corridor. Elephant ear-sized leaves swayed in the wind, a dark emerald that gleamed in the light. Jungle animals howled, and enormous lightning bugs flitted along the path. They were too big to be regular bugs, so they were most likely some kind of fairy. But I wasn't going to stop to investigate. There were dangerous creatures in the jungle at night, one of the reasons we hadn't wanted to go now. And in our world, fairies could be considered dangerous, especially if you called them lightning bugs. A roar sounded in the distance, echoing through the jungle and making the leaves rustle on either side as small animals scurried for safety. The roar came again, only closer. Then another, and another.
Oh, shit, I muttered. This was bad.
Author's note. Thanks for listening to Undercover Magic. If you've listened to any of my previous books, you may have noticed that I have a fondness for including historical places and mythological elements. I did the same with Undercover Magic. Sometimes the history of these things is so interesting that I want to share more, so I like to do it in the author's note instead of the story itself. One of the biggest historical elements of the book is Caer, otherwise known as Beltacadros, the Celtic god of war. The Celts were not actually a single kingdom or religion. Rather, they were a people who shared cultural similarities during the Iron Age. Between 800 BC and 500 AD, they lived in a vast territory stretching from Ireland all the way to Eastern Europe and down into Spain, Portugal, and parts of Italy. Though we think of Celtic as being traditionally Irish and Scottish, it originated in what is now Austria. Celtic culture then spread outward, covering most of Europe. Because of the Roman conquest, Ireland and the British Isles were the last places to have Celtic-speaking communities, all the way up to the 6th century AD, which is why we initially think of them when we hear the word Celtic. Because of the massive spread of Celtic culture and the many different kinds of Celts, there were multiple Celtic gods of war. Beltacadros was worshipped in northern Britain around the time of the Roman conquest at the beginning of the first millennium AD. Evidence of his existence, in the minds of the ancient Celts and Romans, exists from 28 inscriptions on Hadrian's Wall, which was built to keep the Romans from conquering what is now Scotland. Roman soldiers actually worshipped Beltacadros, who is associated with their god of war, Mars. His name is often translated as Fair Slayer, or Fair Shining One. So I suppose he was handsome, which works for Caer. As for the rest of the history in Undercover Magic, the scene in Venice was really fun to write, because Venice is full of great historical places. Pavalia Island really is a plague quarantine island, used in 1776 to house plague victims who came in on ships destined for Venice. There was an asylum for the mentally ill built on the island in the early 20th century, and the island is now mostly abandoned. The Vampire of Venice is based on a body discovered on the plague island of Lazzaretto Nuovo, which is located close to Pavalia Island. The skeleton of a woman was dated to the Venetian plague of 1576 and was found with a brick jammed between her jaws. This was a medieval practice, meant to prevent vampires from continuing to feed after they'd been put into the ground. San Zaccaria is a real church in Venice with a flooded crypt. But even more interesting than that, the Room of Skulls and Bones is based on a real place. It is based on the Capuchin Crypt in Rome, though there is a similar one in Paris. The Capuchin Crypt is decorated with the skeletal remains of 3,700 bodies that are believed to be the Capuchin friars who served the order between 1528 and 1870. The first bodies used to decorate the crypt in 1631 came from the friars' old monastery. They brought 300 wagons full of bones of deceased friars. The new additions to the crypt were allowed to decompose for roughly 30 years in the soil before being exhumed and placed in the crypt. There are 6 rooms in the crypt of the skulls, the crypt of the pelvises, the crypt of the leg bones and thigh bones, the crypt of 3 skeletons, the crypt of the resurrection, and the mass chapel. This place is meant to be a reminder of our mortality and short time on earth. The fistfight bridge that Caer and Bree drive under in their boat is based on Ponte dei Pugni, the Bridge of Fists. The tradition of fighting atop the bridge began in the early 17th century, and they were hugely popular. They were held in neighborhoods all over Venice, on more than one bridge, and the fighters were often sponsored by the wealthy elite. 4 fighters would stand on the bridge, one on each corner, and fight to throw the others off into the water. The last remaining fighter won. In 1705, the fight devolved into a riot, and they were outlawed for good. As for some of the history in the rest of the book, Arach is Gaelic for dragon. The Badwater is a real place in Death Valley,
an ancient, dried-out salt lake. But I don't think there are any salt monsters there. I mentioned that Cass, Del, and Nix are treasure hunters, who return the artifact to its original resting place. They do this because it's morally and legally the right thing to do. And I am an archaeologist as well as a writer, so it is important to me. Well, I think that's it for the history and mythology in Undercover Magic. I hope you enjoyed the book, and we'll come back for more of Bree, Anna, and Cade. Acknowledgements. Thank you, Ben, for everything. There would be no books without you. Thank you to Denna O'Connor, Lindsay Laux, and Donna Rich for your excellent editing. The book is immensely better because of you. Thank you to Arena Cafe for the beautiful cover art. Thank you to Colette Marquardt for allowing me to borrow the Pugs of Destruction, who are real dogs named Chaos, Mayhem, and Ruckus. They were all adopted from rescue agencies. Glossary. Alpha Council. There are two governments that enforce law for supernaturals. The Alpha Council and the Order of the Magicka. The Alpha Council governs all shifters. They work cooperatively with the Order of the Magicka when necessary. For example, when capturing fire souls. Blood Sorcerer. A type of Magicka who can create magic using blood. Dark Magic. The kind that is meant to harm. It's not necessarily bad, but it often is. Demons. Often employed to do evil. They live in various hells, but can be released upon the Earth if you know how to get to them and then get them out. If they are killed on Earth, they are sent back to their hell. Dragon Sense. A fire soul's ability to find treasure. It is an internal sense that pulls them toward what they seek. It is easiest to find gold, but they can find anything or anyone that is valued by someone. Jinn. Possesses invisibility and the ability to possess others for brief periods of time. Earth-walking gods. Reincarnates of the ancient gods who can walk upon the earth. They are mortal, but with all the power of that god. Enchanted artifacts. Artifacts can be imbued with magic that lasts after the death of the person who put the magic into the artifact. Unlike a spell that has not been put into an artifact, these spells disappear after the magicka's death. But magic is not stable. After a period of time, hundreds or thousands of years, depending on the circumstance, the magic will degrade. Eventually, it can go bad and cause many problems. Fire Mage. A mage who can control fire. Fire Soul. A very rare type of magicka who shares a piece of the dragon's soul. They can locate treasure and steal the gifts, powers, of other supernaturals. With practice, they can manipulate the gifts they steal, becoming the strongest of that gift. They are despised and feared. If they are caught, they are thrown in the prison of magical deviance. The Great Piece. The most powerful piece of magic ever created. It hides magic from the eyes of humans. Magicka. Any supernatural who has the power to create magic. Witches, sorcerers, mages. All are governed by the Order of the Magicka. Order of the Magicka. There are two governments that enforce law for supernaturals. The Alpha Council and the Order of the Magicka. The Order of the Magicka govern all magicka. They work cooperatively with the Alpha Council when necessary. For example, when capturing fire souls. Seeker. A type of supernatural who can find things. Fire souls often pass off their dragon sense as seeker power. Shifter. A supernatural who can turn into an animal. All are governed by the Alpha Council. Transporter. A type of supernatural who can travel anywhere. Their power is limited and must regenerate after each use. Undercover Protectorate. A secret organization dedicated to protecting supernaturals and solving the crimes that no one else will. Vampire. Blood-drinking supernaturals with great strength and speed who live in a separate realm. This has been Undercover Magic. Written by Lindsay Hall. Narrated by Laurel Schroeder. Copyright 2017 by Lindsay Hall. Production copyright 2017 by Lindsay Hall.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.